powers cannot fulfill love needs. You can possess great kingdom, that will not fulfill your love needs. But if you possess one heart which throbs with you in tune, then you are fulfilled. The bowels sing, O my heart, let us go then on a promenade to the grove of Krishna's love. The breeze of joy will calm your life. In that woodland eternally bloom 5 scented flowers. Their fragrance will enchant your life and soul, giving them sovereign dignity. Enter the temple of love, and you always enter it as a sovereign. Enter into the world of things, and you always enter as a beggar. The world reduces everybody to be a beggar. Love raises everybody to be an emperor. Love is an alchemical phenomenon. Even if one heart has flowed towards you, God has reached through that heart. Somebody looked towards you with love. In that moment, God looked at you. Watch the eye full of love, the hand full of love, and you will find God throbbing there. Because it is always God who loves. To love is to become God. To allow love to happen is to become God. Whenever you fall from the peak of love, then it is something else. You become possessive. You become a husband and a wife. Then you are no more in the grip of God. But whenever you reach to the peak, maybe for a single moment, sometimes it happens, when two persons are in absolute harmony, no barriers, no fence even exists between them. They are not throbbing as two centers. They become one center. In that moment, God happens. When love happens, God happens. When God descends on earth, His name is love. Each fruit is open to two frontiers and born on a pair of trees. Listen carefully. Each fruit is open to two frontiers and born on a pair of trees. Have you ever seen one fruit born on a pair of trees? One fruit is on one tree. Two trees are not needed for one fruit. Love is that fruit which is born on two trees, never on one tree. Each fruit is open to two frontiers and born on a pair of trees. Deep meditation reveals the knowledge beyond any doubt. When you love somebody and somebody loves you, then there comes a moment when these two trees are not two trees. Then it becomes one tree. That tree is the tree of love. And on that tree of love is fulfillment, is fruition, is flowering. The two who are wholly present can bring forth a fruit to offer the Master. They are conscious and fruitful. Let me repeat, the two who are wholly present in love, two persons are simply present to each other, doing nothing. Love knows nothing of doing. When two persons are in deep in love, they are simply present to each other. They face each other. Just present. As if two lamps are burning, illuminating each other. Our two mirrors are facing each other, reflecting each other in a millionfold way. Two lovers are just in each other's presence, saturated by the other, penetrated by the other. In that state, a moment arises, the climax, the peak moment, when the fruit is born. When they are no more two, when all distinction is lost, when the egos don't exist, when they have become pure presences, then the fruit is born. The two who are wholly present can bring forth a fruit to offer the Master, and that is the fruit to be offered to the Master, to God. They are conscious and fruitful. In that peak of love, they are totally conscious and fruitful. Remember, love is not something like unconsciousness. Ordinarily, when you are in love, you become more unconscious. Then it is lust. Then it is the very lowest denominator. Then it is the lowest rung of the ladder. Of course, it belongs to the ladder, but the lowest rung. At the highest rung, there is tremendous consciousness. And if you cannot be conscious in the presence of your lover, where else you are going to be conscious? If the presence of your lover is not worth to be conscious, then where else you will find the treasure to be conscious? If you love the person, if you really love, a peak of consciousness arises. Just you would like to observe, to see your beloved or your lover. You would like to be with a pure presence. And they help each other to be more and more conscious. Because when the one becomes more conscious, it immediately reflected into the other. The other becomes more conscious. And it works like a chain reaction. Higher and higher they go. And then there comes a moment when the fruit is born. That fruit is called love. That love you can offer to the Master of the world. No other fruit will do. They are conscious and fruitful. And in that peak of consciousness, they are fruitful. Otherwise, people live a fruitless life. People live an unfruitful life. People live without fruition. Nothing is born out of them. They simply live and die. There is no meaning and no significance in their life. The significance arises only when two trees have become one tree. And when on that one tree the fruit of love is born, conscious and fruitful, the well never sinks into the water. The bowls say, "You see, go and see a well full of water, but it never sinks into the water." This is very mysterious. When you are absolutely drowned into oneness, for the first time you are, you never sink into it. You are merged. All boundaries lost. But then happens a paradox. The paradox of being lost completely and yet being for the first time yourself. When you are lost completely, you are for the first time your reality. You are full, surrounded by tremendous force, but you are not sunk in it. You are one with it. But for the first time, your flame burns. Without any ego, your being is revealed. Bowl sing, let ripeness appear in its own time for the full flavor of the fruit. A green jackfruit can be softened by blows but not made sweet. And they say this love you cannot force. There is no way to manipulate it. It is nothing that you can do about it. All that you can do is to allow. Let ripeness appear in its own time. It will come in its own time. What do you do when you watch a tree, an apple tree? What you do? You don't pull the fruits. You don't force. You just watch. You take care, every care that is needed. You protect the tree. You water the tree. Fertilizers and manure and everything that you can do, you do. But what can you do to force? That is just helping the tree to ripe in its own time. Then the fruit comes. Then you watch. One day it is ripe, sweet. Let ripeness appear in its own time, so bowls are not for any sort of yoga. They are against yoga. That's why I told you in the beginning, they belong to the tradition of Tantra, not to the tradition of Veda, yoga, no. In fact, bowls tradition is more ancient than the tradition of Veda and yoga. Historians say that Tantra is pre-Aryan. When the Aryans came to India, Tantra was in existence here, and Shiva was their god. When Aryans came to India, they overran India. They defeated the people who were living here. Their religion was crushed. Their scriptures destroyed. And by, even their gods were absorbed into the pantheon of the Aryans. Shiva was their god. It took very long for him to be absorbed. He was aligned, but he had to be absorbed because he was very influential. And when his all the followers were absorbed into the world of the Aryans, they brought their gods also. Tantra belongs to Shiva, and Baul is an offshoot of the same tree. Tantra says everything happens in its own right time. You need not force it. Your force will not help. It will be a disturbance. It may destroy, but it can never be creative. One has to be very effortless, spontaneous. One has to be in a let go. Let ripeness appear in its own time. For the full flavor of the fruit, a green jackfruit can be softened by blows, but not made sweet. The bowels say that we are not searching liberation. A lover, a seeker of love, never talks in terms of liberation. He says it is tremendously beautiful. All that is already beautiful. There is no need to be liberated from it. All that is needed is how to be in it totally absorbed. The world is not a bondage for the bowel. And there is no need to struggle against it. In fact, the bowel says that we love the bondage of the world because these fetters are also created by you, my Lord. The heart, a lotus, continue flowering age after age. You are bound to it, and so am I. The bowel says to his God, you are bound to it, and so am I. And with no escape, the lotus blossoms, blossoms, blossoms. There is no end to it. But all these lotuses have one type of honey with one particular taste. The bee is avid and unable to leave. So you are bound and I am bound. Where is freedom then? It is a great play of hide and seek between the energy that God is and the energy that you are. It is the same energy in a great hide and seek. It is a great play. There is no need to end it. Let lotuses flower and blossom forever and ever. The world is beautiful. That is the basic tantra attitude. Yoga says one needs to be liberated. Tantra says for what? From whom? The bondage is beautiful because it is God's. The yoga will say, drop by and by all your attachments and finally one has to go beyond love. The bowels say, all attachments are beautiful. Go deeper in them so you don't remain with the periphery but you reach to the center. On the periphery is attachment, at the center is love. The bee is avid and unable to leave. So you are bound and I am bound. Where is freedom then? For the bowel, life is not a serious thing. It is fun. It is laughter. It is joy. So you will not find anything like the seriousness of a churchgoer or the long faces of so-called religious people in the world of the bowels. They love laughter. They love fun. They enjoy small things with tremendous respect. Ordinarily, religions are very long-faced, very somber, serious, because they are against life. I have heard one friend of Mullah Nasruddin was amazed to see that the mullah had hitched his prize-winning possession, his prize-winning bull, to the plow and was guiding it across his fields. He said, "Mullah, have you gone crazy? That bull is worth 25,000 rupees. Why are you letting him pull a plow?" That bull, said the mullah grimly, has got to learn that life is not all play. There are people, the moment you laugh, and they become disturbed. And they would like to teach you that life is not all play. These people are themselves ill. They have missed life. And they would not like anybody else to enjoy it. The priests are ill people. They would not like you to enjoy. They have missed. They are jealous of you. And they have staked too much. Their ego is fulfilled only because they have been against life. They have chosen ego against life. If you choose life, they will be against you. They will go on curbing you. They will go on condemning you. They will go on creating guilt in you. No more calamity. Not a bigger calamity can happen to humanity as it has happened through religions. The calamity is they have created a guilt conscience. So whenever you are enjoying, deep down somewhere you start feeling guilty as if you are doing something wrong. Whenever you are healthy, you start feeling something is wrong. Whenever you are dancing, you start feeling something is wrong. Whenever you laugh, you can never laugh totally because deep down something goes on pulling you back. What are you doing? Because from the very childhood, whenever you were happy, there was somebody to teach you that life is not all play. Stop laughing. Be serious. When you will be mature, be grown up. Enough is enough. Drop all this nonsense of childhood. Somebody was always round the corner to teach you. They have lost. They could not enjoy. They cannot allow others to enjoy. And this is how, from generation to generation, diseases are being transferred. Take hold of your own life. See, the whole existence is celebrating. These trees are not serious. These birds are not serious. The rivers and the oceans are wild. And everywhere there is fun. And everywhere there is joy and delight. Watch existence. Listen to the existence and become part of it. Then you become a bowl. Then you become a lover. Because love can exist only with a deep respect for fun, with a deep respect for delight. Love cannot exist with a serious mind. With a serious mind, logic is in tune. Be non-serious. I am not saying be not sincere. Be sincere, but be non-serious. Sincerity is something else. Seriousness, totally different. Be sincere with existence. Then you will be true. And you will become part of this cosmic leela, this cosmic play. The bowls sing, how can you walk the ways of love carrying stolen loot with impunity? In the forest of Brinda, loving is worshipping. In the forest of Brinda, where Krishna played with his lovers, friends, girlfriends, where he danced, where the ras happens, This word rasa is very beautiful. It means the divine celebration, the divine dance. How can you walk the ways of love carrying stolen loot with impunity in the forest of Brinda? Loving is worshipping. As the essence of purity in the brilliance of the sky, love transcends lust, evolving ecstasy. The bellows breathe into the fire of life and stabilize mercury. Beautiful. The saying is very beautiful. The bellows breathe into the fire of life and stabilize mercury. Even mercury becomes stabilized. So what about lust? Don't be worried. Let there be a goal to your love, a center to your love, a target for your arrow. And love transcends lust. The yoga will say, transcend lust. Fight with lust. It is a negative approach. The bowels say, love. And love transcends lust. It is a positive approach. Tell me, my silent master, O my Lord, what worship may open me to my beloved's lotus bloom? The stars and the moon eternally move with no sound at all. Each cycle of the universe in silence prays, welling up with the essence of love. What physicists call electricity, gravitation, energy fields, what religious people call God, bowels call love. Each cycle of the universe in silence prays, welling up with the essence of love. Trees are in love with the earth. The earth is in love with the trees. The words are in love with the trees. The trees are in love with the words. The earth is in love with the sky. The sky is in love with the earth. Whole existence exists in a great ocean of love. Let love be your worship. Let love be your prayer. The song for today, a very small but a diamond, very precious, and bowels know how to be precise. Just the other night I was reading De Gale's life, and he had a motto on his table. I loved it. Bowels would have appreciated it. The motto is concision in style, precision in thought, decision in life. What dealings can you ever conclude with someone who is unaware of the feelings in loving? The owl stares at the sky, sitting blind to the rays of the sun. The bowels say it is impossible to communicate. What dealings can you ever conclude with someone who is unaware of the feelings in loving? It is impossible to commune with someone who has not known love. How can we talk about God? How can we talk meaningfully about prayer? How can we say anything about the truth? Because he is completely unaware of his own heart. He does not know the language. He has lived in the head. He is like the owl. He stares at the sky, sitting blind to the rays of the sun. In Indian mythology, the owl is a symbol of knowledge, learning, learnedness. People who are too much learned, too much in their heads, accumulating information and data, are like owls. They cannot see that the sun has risen. They can go on looking and staring at the sun, and still they remain oblivious of the rays of the light. The Baals say, a man who lives in the head, a pandit, a scholar, a man who thinks only in terms of concepts, abstract theories, doctrines, dogmas, who has memorized the Vedas, the Quran, the Bible, he will not be able to understand anything about love. Even if you say, he will immediately misunderstand. If you talk about love, he will make a theory out of it. And love cannot be managed in a theory. If you say something about prayer, he will try to make that prayer look like a hypothesis. And prayer is not a hypothesis. A man of logic always reduces everything to his logic. I have heard a devout clergyman making a tour of the Holy Land arrived at the Sea of Galilee. His heart thrilled. Perhaps one of these very wavelets had touched the feet of the Master himself. A boatman approached. The clergyman addressed him in choicest Arabic, a pocket dictionary of Arabic terms in his hands. "What is the matter?" complained the ferryman. "Can't you talk United States?" He was an American, making his living boating tourists. "So," exclaimed the clergyman, "this is the Sea of Galilee, where our Savior walked upon the waters." "It is. How much will you charge me to take to the exact spot?" "Well, seeing as you look like a clergyman, I won't charge you anything." After reaching the place, the clergyman glanced around with great satisfaction, consulted his texts and commentaries, and at last signaled he was ready to return to shore. "Cost you $20 to take you back." "But you said you would charge nothing. That was to bring you here. And you charge everybody $20 to take them back? That or more." "Well, then," said the devout one, reaching for his pocketbook, "no wonder our Savior got out and walked." Everybody goes on interpreting everything according to his own. Our interpretations are our interpretations. It happened one day, Mullah Nasruddin hailed a taxi just outside the ashram. "Take me to the ashram driver," he demanded, hopping into the cab. The disgusted hacky got out, opened the door and snapped, "You are in front of the ashram fellow." "Okay," grumbled the mullah as he got out, "but next time don't drive so fast." If you are drunk, then you are going to interpret everything through your drunkenness. If you are drunk with logic, love cannot penetrate your skull. Then you have a very thick head, dense it is impossible for love to penetrate. Then you are like the owl. The bowls say, communication is possible only when there exists a common language. So if you want to understand the bowls, you will have to love, because there is no other way to understand love than to love. If you want to understand the man of prayer, pray. Move into prayer. Have a taste of it. Put aside all your logic. Don't try that first I must be logically convinced, then I will pray, because then nobody has ever prayed. Because the first thing is impossible, it cannot be done. Nobody can logically convince you that prayer is meaningful. The very logical framework of your mind prohibits. So you are asking the impossible. If you say first it has to be proved that love is God, then I will love. Then you will have to wait, and you will have to wait for eternity. It is not going to happen. The day it will happen only the way it can happen. And the way for it to happen is, you put aside your logic. Logic is irrelevant. You just love. Have a taste of it. Move into the world of the lovers. Let his singing surround you. Have a feel. And that will become the proof. And that will become the conviction. Then you can bring your logic in, and your logic will start proving it, but not before it. First the taste, the experience, then the logic. Logic is a good servant but a bad master. What dealings can you ever conclude with someone who is unaware of the feelings in loving? The owl stares at the sky, sitting blind to the rays of the sun. Love is a radical change in your innermost core of being. Head is just on the periphery. Head is just like waves on the ocean. Love is like the depth. In the depth there are no waves, and in the waves there is no depth. Thoughts are like waves just on the surface. There is no way for a wave to know the depth, remain in the wave. The wave can know the depth, but then it has to disappear in the depth. It will no more be a wave. Then it can come back to the surface. But then that wave will itself become a bowl. No other wave will listen to it. Other waves will call that wave mad, because she will talk about depths. And waves only know shallowness. They don't know depth. Love is an experience. Existential. Like taste. If you have not tasted salt, there is no way to explain it to you. If you have tasted it, there is no way to forget it. If you have tasted it, then too there is no way to explain it to somebody else who has not tasted it. How to explain to somebody else who has never known anything salty? What to say? Not that you don't know. You know. It is just on the tip of your tongue. You know what saltiness is. But how to say it to somebody else? The only thing is to offer him a little salt. But if he says, first let me be convinced, that there exists something like salt, then only I will take. If he is that much cautious, it is impossible. Then he will have to remain without any experience of salt. And to remain without experiencing love is to remain dead. Because only a lover goes on dropping his dead selves. Because only a lover moves. Because only a lover is dynamic. Logic is dead. Love is alive. I am reminded of a saying of Browning. He used to say, the life process is to rise on stepping stones of our dead selves to higher things. The life process is to rise on stepping stones of our dead selves to higher things. Logic belongs to the past, love belongs to the future. Logic is just moving in the old circle again and again and again. Love moves into new territory. Being yourself is never static. Being in love is also never static. It is always ecstatic. Not static. Ecstatic. Out of status. Out of standing still. Be moving. One never arrives, though one is always arriving. Enough for today.